Welcome to The Productivity Show, the Asian Efficiency Podcast dedicated to helping you make the most of your time, attention, energy, and focus. In this episode, Brooks and I revisit the topic of email, one of our favorites here at Asian Efficiency because it's such a nuisance to your productivity and something that everyone has to deal with on a daily basis. We've talked about the AE email workflow before in episode 166, so in this episode, we're focusing on strategies and tools that you can use to process the email in your inbox even faster. We give you five strategies you can use to get out of your inbox and start reclaiming your time. And we share several resources and tools that you can use no matter what operating system or email client that you prefer. You can find links to everything we discuss in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/183. And now, on with the show. Hey everyone, this is Mike Schmitz, and with me today to talk about email is Brooks Duncan. How are you doing today, Brooks?
I'm excellent. I saw in the Dojo Slack that you said we were going to be supercharging email, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, so the idea for this episode came from what I've seen happen in the email space recently, where it used to be that you needed to have the right email application if you wanted to have all these advanced features, but it seems like a lot of the email applications, like they've kind of hit their ceiling. But there's a lot of additional services and things that you can use to drastically reduce the amount of time that you spend dealing with email. So that's really the goal here today, is to talk about those things that you can apply to your email processing workflow, no matter what email client or system you happen to use. So let's talk a little bit about the problem here. And that is really just that a lot of people don't even think about this stuff, that they just do email, because everybody has this mindset, and it's correct, that email is just something that you have to deal with. And a lot of people don't like the fact that they have to deal with it, but they're kind of resigned to it. They're resigned to the fact that this is just going to take a bunch of their time, and there's really nothing that they can do about it. So a little bit of the bad news before we get into the good news. According to a Radicati email study, it's estimated that next year, the average person is going to receive 126 emails per day, 77 of which are going to be legitimate, 19 of which are going to be spam. So that's a lot of email, even a lot of legitimate email. And if it takes you even a couple of minutes to reply to every one of those 77 legitimate emails, that's going to be a lot of time. And all of that adds up. So it's not just the time that impacts people. It's also the money, the lost productivity that comes from dealing with email instead of what you should be working on, quote unquote. According to a McKinsey social science report, people spend 28% of their workday reading and responding to email, which is almost as much as they spend on their actual work-related tasks. And then there's also a very real cost to the wellness, the stress that comes from having to constantly monitor those email messages, because you never know what's going to be in there. And you kind of project that something is going to be in there that's super important that you need to reply to right away. So you feel like you have to pull open your smartphone and check your email app when you're standing in line at the store or when you're spending time with your family. Like there's that tug mentally that's always there. So we're going to deal with that.
Yeah. Most of us aren't really looking forward to working on email when we sit down at whatever our email program is. So the least we can do in this podcast is at least try and make it a little better for you.
Exactly. So that's a very important distinction. Something that you just said, Brooks, is that most people do not look forward to managing their email. And I think that that's very true of just about everybody. But that is important to recognize. I mean, emails come a long way from the you've got mail days where, like, you see Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks are they can't wait to get home and check their email because of the messages that are going to be there from somebody that they care about. But nowadays, it's just the pure volume that really just overwhelms all of that stuff. Even if there is some good stuff in there, the average person, I would argue, dreads going into their email inbox for no other reason other than there's more than they can handle in there. They don't want to have to make all those decisions, and who can really blame them?
Yeah, and you just always have this feeling that there are more productive things that you could be doing with your time than sitting there processing your email inbox.
Exactly. And so there's two ways that you can spend less time in email. Number one, you can do things to create less email. And we've talked about that in previous episodes, but really what we're going to be focusing on today is the second way to spend less time in email is to deal with your current email workload more efficiently. this is the short-term win. You can create less email, and that's going to have a compound effect over time by, for example, when you send a message, kind of predicting what the follow-up questions might be and actually resolving the issue rather than just clearing it out of your inbox, for example. But when it comes to actionable stuff that you can do right now, you're listening to this podcast episode and you're going to do something as soon as you get done with this that's going to have a positive impact. Number two here, where you deal with your current email workload more efficiently, this is where there are some quick wins. And we want to give you some strategies that you can implement right away to make the amount of email that you have to process tomorrow even easier. So the way we're going to do this, we're going to break this down into five ways that you can save time with email. So we're going to talk about some different strategies and things that you can use there. And then we'll get into some specific resources that we would recommend. And I believe that there are six of them here, but I'm sure we'll think of a few more along the way.
I'm sure. Yeah, there's a lot of conceptual things you can do. There's a lot of kind of structuring things you can do to make email better. But this one, this and we've done other podcasts about that sort of thing, but this is like super tactical. This I'm actually pretty excited about this because this is like getting right into it, really actionable, tactical things that you can do.
Nice. So let's dive in. First one, first way that you can save time with email. And this is something that I've kind of shied away from in the past because I never thought I really needed it. But as I was doing the research for this episode in particular, really highlighted the impact that this can make. And that is to use email filters. All right. Now, I do use email filters. Let me clarify there. But for a long time, I've kind of thought in the back of my mind that these would be nice, but maybe they're not worth the amount of time that you have to set them up. They are totally worth the amount of time that you need to invest to set them up. So we mentioned the average person gets 126 emails. 77 of those are legitimate. Okay. There are still 49 non-legitimate emails that you have to look at, figure out what it is, and then decide if it is legitimate. And that takes time. So just imagine if you could automatically eliminate those 49 non-legitimate emails. So all you had to deal with were the 77 legitimate emails. That's what email filters or email rules do. I read a Muse article which told a story about this person receiving an email about company coffee and tea selection that was over 350 words. And in the article, they compared it to the Gettysburg Address, which was only 271 words. And a lot of times, like these emails that aren't important, they masquerade as important. Like you could read all of those 350 words before you get to the punchline and realize that, you kidding me? I just spent all this time to find out that they changed the coffee and the tea selections in the room downstairs. So why not just skip all those 350 words altogether with an email filter?
Yeah. And some people might say that email filters are kind of like a band-aid. Like maybe you should be going to the root of the problem. Maybe you should be going through and making your email better and not relying on filters to keep things out of your inbox, which is probably true. But we're talking quick wins here. And if you can set up, and these things are super easy to set up in whatever email platform you're on, if you can set up a few filters that will have that big of an impact right away, why not do that? Get them out of your inbox at the very least, and then later you can deal with it if you want to.
Exactly. So let's give people an examples of some of these quick wins. We'll have three examples of email filters that you can set up here. The first one is CC'd emails. So imagine you set up a rule or a filter in your email client, which takes all the emails that you are CC'd on, not the ones that are sent to you, but the ones that typically are sent in a lot of organizations. For example, there's one person that an email goes to and the rest of the 20 other people who are CC'd or BCC'd on the email, it's kind of like, I need to include you in this so that I have a paper trail. There's accountability there in case this comes back and bites me, sort of a thing. But you don't really have to read all the details of those emails. You can go back and search for them if you need them later. Wouldn't it be great if you could set up an email rule which recognized whatever messages in your inbox that you are CC'd on, not the ones that are sent to you, those just automatically got put into a folder. And then once a week, you could go through that folder, or you could click on that email rule, that email filter, and you could see the ones that you are CC'd, and you could very quickly, because you're in that mental mode that these really aren't that important. Maybe there's something in here that's going to grab my attention, but for the most part, I can just cruise through these. And you can process those a lot more efficiently in one batch than you would if you're having to pick these through your as you're sorting through your inbox every day.
Yeah. And, you know, you, as you're listening to this, you might have some red flags that pop up that say, oh, you know, but, you know, my boss, I wouldn't want, I'd be in trouble if I didn't see the emails that my boss CC'd me on, which is totally fine. You can, when you're setting up these filters, you could do things like, you know, filter out emails that are CC'd to me, except those that come from these certain people. So you can handle that type of situation. But the key is you want to keep out of your inbox, like you said, those emails that your coworker send but wanted to show everyone how smart they are, so they just CC'd 20 people and that sort of thing. That's what you want to eliminate.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point here where you can combine these things together. So we're going to give you kind of some entry-level examples, but really the power in these email rules and email filters is when you start combining things and you really customize these. The second one is an unsubscribe filter. So this would take everything that is a newsletter or an offer and put it into one place where you could filter through it. And you could decide just by going through this email rule or this email filter that I want to stay subscribed to this thing, or I don't want to stay subscribed to this thing. There's a lot of things that we subscribe to and they get lost in the big list of emails that are in there. Like Andrew's talking about in the podcast channel and in the Slack team, that there's too many messages and saying later. Okay. So yeah, I've been there. I totally feel your pain. If you've got 500 messages and saying later and you're going through these, the instinct is going to be just hit delete rather than dealing with the root of the problem, which is unsubscribing. So you could set up an email rule or an email filter, which searches for the word unsubscribe. And this is what Nate's alluding to, because I know I was working with Nate when we were putting together an email product. And he was telling me that this tip really helped him. If you search for unsubscribe, you get a quick list of everything that you can unsubscribe from, because those emails that you opt into, they do have to have an unsubscribe link. Now, it's not always names unsubscribe. So maybe when you create your email rule or your filter, you use the or modifier. So you could do something like unsubscribe or opt out or manage your preferences. And then the end result is that you've got something that's going to really collect everything. And you can Google search for a list of common terms that you could use there. But the main idea here is that you want to catch everything that you have the potential to unsubscribe from in one place.
Yeah. And maybe you're going to miss a few, you know, maybe you set it up and you get a few terms, but you miss a few, but that's okay. You're still going to get the vast majority of it. So if you have to modify it over time, just start with the 80-20, get the big ones, and then later you can refine it over time. That's totally fine.
Yep, exactly. And then the third example here is website notifications. So LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, for Asian efficiency team members, Jira, because there isn't a way to manage those email preferences that I found anyways. And so it sends you an email whenever somebody comments and tags you in an issue, or if you created the issue, for example, you'll get the updates for it. And you can just not pay attention to those emails, but it'd be even better to just get them out of your inbox altogether, so you don't, like I said, have to make those decisions about whether this is important or not. You could create an email rule or an email filter which grabbed everything from these specific services. Maybe this filter is set up by the URL that it's coming from, and it puts it into one place, so you can just real quickly go through those and most likely delete them at the end. But maybe there's something in there once in a while that's valuable, and you can take action on it.
Yeah. And again, like we said before, yeah, maybe you should, where it's possible, go into all these different services, Facebook, Twitter, whatever, and, you know, manage your notification preferences and stop it from coming in. Yeah, probably a good idea. But for now, why not just get them out of your inbox? You know, Twitter is notorious for sending emails saying, oh, so-and-so tweeted this, so-and-so tweeted this. Maybe you should follow so-and-so. I don't really care about any of that stuff, so I'm just going to have it filtered out of my inbox, and yeah, maybe later I'll go and unsubscribe it. And the things like you were saying, Jira or similar systems, where if you're anyone who works in a company where you have a system that generates these email notifications, maybe some of them are important and some of them aren't. So like we were talking about earlier, you could start fine-tuning these and say things like filter out messages from this ABC system unless it has the word critical in it, or whatever your criteria is. So you can make it so that you still get the important ones, but the the kind of informational ones that aren't going to impact your day to day, get them out of your inbox.
Yep, exactly. So how do you set up email rules or filters? I thought it'd be valuable if we just pointed people in the right direction. So obviously this is a podcast auditory format. We're not going to be able to show you, but we can kind of explain in some common email clients anyways where you might go to do these. The first one I've got here is Outlook. You have more experience with Outlook than I do, so I'm going to let you take this one, Brooks.
Yeah. So Outlook, there is a few different ways to do this. You can right-click on an email and create, if it's a type of email you want to create a rule from, you can right-click on it and create your rule from there, or you can go up to File, or depending on your version of Outlook, it's probably in a different place, but somewhere in the settings, there's a setting called Manage Rules and Alert. So you just go in there, go to Email Rules, and then there's this really handy rules wizard that will take you through building that rule out. You can select from a template, it gives you a bunch of suggestions, or you can create it from scratch. Rules in Outlook are something that I'm actually, to the extent that one can be passionate about Outlook, I'm pretty passionate about the power of rules. You can do some insane things in Outlook with rules, and I think it's a really underused feature. So if you're an Outlook user, I highly recommend becoming familiar with rules and alerts.
Nice. I'm going to take your word for that because I'm definitely not an Outlook power user. Next one here is Gmail. So in Gmail, the way that you would set up a rule or a filter is kind of like Nate was talking about, where you would search for the word unsubscribe, for example. You would open Gmail, you go to that search box, and you can even type in your term just like you were going to do that search. But then there's a down arrow, a disclosure triangle in the right side of the search bar, which if you click it is going to open up some additional criteria. Here you can fill out all the additional information. So has attachment, for example, that's a checkbox, to or from, all those sorts of things. And then at the bottom of this search window, there's another link where you can create a filter with this search. And that basically just saves the search that you're going to create. And so as you're doing the search almost, you can create these filters inside of Gmail, which is pretty handy. The last one here is Apple Mail. So in Apple Mail, you would go to, these are built into the Apple Mail client, which is kind of nice. Rules and filters are not always built into third-party email clients, but in Apple Mail, they are. So you go to Preferences from the Mail menu. You click the Rules button in the Preferences window that opens. You click the Add Rule button, and you fill in the description. So this is what the rule is going to be called. And then you can use the drop-down menu to select if any or if all. And these can be useful if you want multiple conditions set. So Apple Mail's layout is a little bit different. It's kind of like Hazel, if you're familiar with that app. I know you are, Brooks, where you can kind of combine all these different things and you can have it do like if or sorts of things. But you can select from the list and the conditions. So you could put the sender, you could put has attachments, you could really select from any of the different criteria that could be applied to a message inside of Apple Mail. It's pretty powerful, the number of things that you can select from there. And then you can either, like I said, choose one of these conditions or select all these conditions and then create a rule based on that.
Yeah, the key is that most of these platforms let you mix and match things. So you don't have to worry about one rule fits all or it getting more than you think. You can really fine tune it. And it becomes really powerful, and it's easy to do.
Right. So that's quite a bit on the first one, use email filters. The other ones are not going to be as in-depth, but this is definitely something that I thought was worth diving into a little bit. The second one here is to use text expansion for canned responses. And there's a couple different ways to do this. We'll get into some of our tools that we like in the resources section. But regardless of the tool that you use, the principle here is that you don't want to type the same thing over and over and over again when you can automate it. So if you work in sales or customer service, recognizing those phrases that you use repeatedly and automating them is going to instantly give you back hours every day. I know when I was in sales, I had text expansion set up that allowed me to change just a couple of values. I had a fill-in part at the beginning where I'd put the person's first name. I had a drop-down where I would select from a couple different options. It would pull in the URL of the proposal that I had created. I had optional content so I could check a couple boxes, and all of a sudden I've got several paragraphs in this email, which is personalized, and it looks like it took me about an hour to write this, but it really took me about 30 seconds. So that saved me tons and tons of time. And when you start looking at these text expansion opportunities, you'll probably be surprised how many of the emails you send are more or less the same.
Even if you're hearing this and you're not comfortable with the idea of sending out form letters, that's not really what we're talking about, because you could have an email where, say, 60% or half or 30% of the email is, you know, unique and typed it there, but there's often like little phrases that you use throughout an email or the general structure of an email that is the that you use a lot. Maybe it's just the saying, hope this helps. Just let me know if you have any questions. Maybe you tend to end a lot of emails like that, or thanks for your purchase. Apologies for the inconvenience or something like that. There's a lot of times there's these little phrases you use throughout emails. And so if you find yourself typing something more than twice, three times in the emails that you send, it's really worth taking a couple seconds to set up a text expansion snippet to do that. It just makes email so much faster.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad you called out the example of hope that helps. Let me know if you have any additional questions. That's something that I've set up in mind, that exact phrase.
Sometimes when I do conference speaking and I'm talking about this type of subject, I'll say, you know, if you've ever gotten an email from me, there's a good chance that like 60% of it comes from a text expansion snippet. It's not that I'm not putting the same amount of care into the email, but I'm just making things so I can answer more people. That's the kind of mindset that I have about this stuff.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that maybe takes a little bit to get over when you first start using text expansion, is the fact that, well, this is canned, so it maybe comes across as less personal. And I don't think that that's the case. I think that is something that you have to get over, though. I think most people, when they start using text expansion, especially as it applies to email, they probably feel bad that they're not taking the time to craft the entire message from scratch every time. But really, when pain is sufficient, change will come. You know, when you have too much email to keep up with, text expansion is a great strategy.
Also, when you're creating these text expansion snippets, the important thing and the way you can avoid that canned feeling is to make those text expansion snippets in your voice. So don't have them all like corporate speaky type thing, unless that's the voice you're trying to portray. Have these things as you would type them out, and then it's fine. It's still you typing it. It's just that you typed it once instead of typing it 1,000 times. Either way, it's still either way, it's still you.
Yep, exactly. There's different ways to implement text expansion. I know that even iOS and macOS has text expansion built into the system preferences. It's kind of a pain to get to that.
Yep.
Gmail has canned responses. I believe you had mentioned that Outlook has email templates and quick parts, which are built in. So how you use this, there's lots of different options. But the basic idea is that if you're not using text expansion right now, you should be.
Definitely.
All right. The third one here is to use a shared inbox for team accounts. This seems pretty straightforward, and I think when you hear this, maybe you think like, well, I do have this inbox that I check with a couple other people, but we don't get a whole lot of email into it, so it really doesn't matter. It matters.
Yeah.
This is something that I ran into a lot when I was talking with people and we were doing the research for the inbox detox program. People would be working as parts of as teams, and they would have a shared email, but they wouldn't use something that allowed them to create tickets and assign the email to a specific person. And what happens in that scenario is that you've got one email that comes into this shared email inbox. Usually it's an IMAP account so that it looks the same everywhere. And you've got 10 different people who are logging into this IMAP account and reading the message, but nothing gets done with it, since no one knows who's ultimately responsible for it. This is a huge waste of time.
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually glad that you mentioned using a team account, because, or some sort of shared inbox, because first of all, like you said, you want to make sure that you have a process so that people know that who is doing what and that stuff doesn't sit there. But not using a shared inbox or a team account is actually can actually cause problems because you have emails going to one person and maybe they're sick and or on vacation and leave the company, and it's like a black hole. No one knows what's going on. So this is something internally at AE we implemented, where we try to, as much as possible, if we're communicating with people outside of the organization, we try to, as much as possible, use team accounts so that if somebody all of a sudden is not available, everything doesn't grind to a halt.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a little bit difficult sometimes when you've got some history with somebody and they like to email your personal email and you say, no, actually, can you send it here?
Yeah, totally.
But it's worth it in the long run, because that stuff is there if someone needs to deal with it. But the real value here is that, like, for example, the support@asianefficiency.com email address. We've got people who are working on that, but all of those emails that come in there are getting assigned to people. When someone sees something that they're going to deal with, they assign it to themselves. And then everybody else knows that they don't have to worry about that message anymore. In fact, it doesn't even appear in the unassigned inbox. That's the value here, is that once one person sees something and can do something with it, why just leave it there to take everybody's attention and time as they read through it and try to figure it out too? Just have one person, the person who can actually solve the problem, deal with it.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, number four is use VIP notifications. Now, this is not available in all email clients, but there are several email clients that this is baked into, and I'm going to share, when we get to the resources, a service that can do this sort of thing as well. So we've talked a lot about notifications. Notifications are bad. They can interrupt you at any time and instantly steal your focus away from what you should be doing. But sometimes you need them, and I get that, especially people who work in a corporate setting. You got a boss who expects you to respond to their emails right away. Well, wouldn't it be great if you just got notifications when your boss emailed you, but everything else you could check whenever? Those things weren't popping up on your computer or on your smartphone saying, hey, pay attention to me when you're trying to get real work done. That's what VIP notifications do. They allow notifications from certain people that you've designated as VIPs, very important people, but they block out everything else. And this makes a huge difference.
Yeah, there's a fun thread in the Dojo. I can't remember if it was the Dojo Slack or the Dojo Forum, but I read recently where people were sharing kind of how they do their notifications, and pretty much everybody says, yep, I have notifications turned off, no notifications, oh, except for my spouse or except for my boss. So there's always an except for. Some programs support it, like you said. Outlook, for example, doesn't necessarily have VIP, but you can use those rules and alerts that we talked about earlier to do the same thing.
Yep. So figure out a way that you can implement this in some way, shape, or form. And like I said, we've got a resource that I'm going to share with you in a little bit that you can use with really any email client or service. The fifth one here is to use direct integrations whenever possible. Now, Nate shared in the podcast channel, and he had mentioned, are we going to talk about the workflow? We're not going to talk about the workflow in this particular episode, but there's a very important thing that applies to the processing flowchart that Nate had put in the podcast channel. And that is that you should use direct integrations whenever possible. So I've worked with Nate, and he's mentioned that Airmail really, really works for him. One of the great things about Airmail is that it's got these direct integrations with just about every productivity application. Now, you don't have to use Airmail. You can use any application you want, but you should use these direct integrations whenever you can. The number one reason people leave email in their inbox and it piles up is that they don't want to do anything with it right now. When we were doing the workflow, one of the categories of emails that we saw that caused this a lot of times was these emails that people wanted to read later. Okay, so read it later. And by setting up a read it later service, something where you could send those emails to and then archive them, that gave people a lot of relief. They felt a lot better about managing their email inbox. You don't want to leave things in your inbox because that's the violation of the touch at once principle that we talk about. It causes stress, and the feeling is that you need to keep looking at your email to see what's in it.
Yeah, this is the Katie in the Dojo says, I've never regretted switching to Airmail because that's the app that she uses for email, because those integrations are priceless. And it's the same with me. I always think about, maybe I'll just start using the stock mail app again, but I find that I I personally use an app called Dispatch, and I find that it's that integration. It's that being able to send things directly to my task manager, which is OmniFocus, that I find invaluable and makes it so I don't drop the ball on things like that.
Yep, absolutely. And there's a little bit of a debate going on in the podcast channel right now about the different tools and the integrations. There's lots of different applications that offer direct integrations. Really, I probably shouldn't have even mentioned AirMail, because the focus on this episode is not on the specific applications. It's more the principles and the services, which we're going to get into in just a second here. But the direct integrations, I can't overstate the importance of these things, because you want to be able to triage these things, get them out of your email inbox, archive them, and move on. If there's any hole in your system, any reluctance to take an action on an email because you don't have the specific container that it should go into set up, then that is going to cause that email backlog, and your inbox is just going to fill up, and you're going to have, you know, thousands of messages, and you're going to feel stressed just looking at the unread badge, and you're never going to want to go in there. So these direct integrations, what they do is they just eliminate a lot of that friction. All right, let's get into the resources. Number one, and this is something that people have been talking about in the podcast channel. I've tried not to reference it because I knew we were going to get to it, but that is SaneBox. So SaneBox is an incredible service that you can use with just about any email account type. And really what it does is it's not an application. It's something that happens server side that does a lot of different things. The main thing that it does is it filters out the unimportant messages from your inbox and puts them into a Sane Later folder. So it's got a built-in email ruler filter, which is going to determine which things are important and which things aren't. Now, some people will say, what's the use of that? I still have to go through that Sane Later folder. Yes, you do. But you can check your inbox once a day, for example, or maybe in the morning and in the afternoon. And the Sane Later folder, you can check once a week. And you, like I said, you can get into that batch processing mode and just crank through all of those emails at once. It's much more efficient. And SaneBox does an incredible job of recognizing what's important and what's not simply by looking at the sender, the subject line, and who and what you do with it. Okay, so it does not look at the contents of the email. It respects your privacy, but it does a great job of filtering just based on those criteria. And then it does a bunch of other things, which I'll let you talk about some of these.
Yeah. And one nice thing about SaneBox too is if it does get something wrong, so something goes into Sane Later that should be in the inbox, or something goes in the inbox that should be in Sane Later, it's really easy to fix that. It's just a matter of dragging it like you normally would otherwise, and it learns. So, you know, we talked about setting up filters earlier, and filters are super, super powerful, but you don't even necessarily have to do that with SaneBox as much. It just watches where you move it to, and then it learns from there. And yeah, like you said, there's so many things that SaneBox does. You can cut down on spam without having to deal with unsubscribing. Just put it in a folder called Sane Black Hole. It creates these folders for you that do special things. You can create follow-up tasks using Sane Reminder, so you can have it remind you of things if there's an email that you can't really deal with right now. You can do stuff with attachments, kind of reduce that inbox clutter and have it automatically save attachments for you so that you get them out of your inbox and you can have it saved to different cloud services. So yeah, it's really, really powerful. And what you do with it, you know, there's different plans that you can choose depending on things like how many emails addresses you want it to manage and how much you use these extra features.
Right. Let's back up a little bit here, because there's a couple important distinctions that need to be made here. So the Sane Black Hole, for example, the podcast channel is going too quick for me to keep up with, but somebody in there had mentioned that unsubscribing, by searching for the unsubscribe and then clicking the link, often that doesn't work. And I feel your pain, whoever that was, because not every email, not every person or organization that sends an email has pure intentions and is going to honor your unsubscribe requests. Okay, they're supposed to, but they don't always do that. So what Sane Black Hole does is it's a server-side filter which when you drag an email into the same black hole folder, what it does is it says, I never want to see another email from this sender ever again. So you don't have to click on the unsubscribe link, and you don't have to worry about the person that's sending it to you. A lot of times, like those emails, if you don't know who it's from, it could be somebody who just wants you to click on subscribe so that they can verify that you're a person on the other end who cares about your email, and then they can flood it with a bunch of additional messages. Okay, if with same black hole, you don't have to worry about that. You just drag it into that folder. Same box does the rest. The other person doesn't get notified of anything. You just never see their messages. And then also with the same reminders, this is we're getting a little bit geeky here. So I apologize in advance, I guess. But same reminders, one of the problems with the direct integrations with task managers, even if you use those, is that let's say I've got an email that I want to take action on. All right, I reply to Nate, let's say, because he asked me a question about airmail, and I've got a follow-up question for him. Okay, so when I create that task in Samebox or in OmniFocus, for example, to make sure that Nate gets back to me, OmniFocus is no longer connected to my email client. And that means that I can put it in a waiting for context. I can go in there manually and I can check in with Nate to see if he replied to me. But if he does reply to me, OmniFocus doesn't know that. I have to go in and check that task off. So there's a disconnect there. But with Sane Reminders, what you can do when you send the message back to the person that you're expecting a response from is in the BCC field, you can put a time frame, like maybe 1 week at samebox.com. What that does then is if the person does not reply within the specified time frame, the message will come back to your inbox so you know you need to follow up with them again. If they do reply, the reminder just disappears. So it's a more efficient way that cuts out that additional step of creating the task in the task manager, because once it's in the task manager, it doesn't have any way of communicating with the email client to make sure that you actually did something with it.
Yeah, if you're somebody who has to have a lot of follow-ups and you want to make sure that you're, if you're waiting for somebody to reply, if you're somebody who waits on replies a lot, a feature like that is really, really handy.
Now, Samebox, I've actually done a webinar with the Samebox crew before. So we definitely, I mean, we like Samebox a lot. We've used Samebox before we started working with them. But we do also have a discount for Samebox inside the dojo. So if you decide that you want to try it out, there is a credit that you can get by using the code that's in the dojo. The second resource also has a discount code, and that is Text Expander. So Text Expander is a simple tool that does exactly what it says. It expands text, all right, which sounds simple, but it makes a huge difference. In fact, Text Expander includes a calculator to show you how much time you've saved. When I was sending those proposals all the time and I had a bunch of business templates that I was using, this literally saved me days worth of typing.
Yeah, I just checked mine to see how many I've saved since I installed it. And apparently I've saved 95 hours of typing at 60 words per minute since I've installed it just on this computer.
That's incredible. So Text Expander has a bunch of features beyond the basic text expansion. So like I said, you can use text expansion, you can use canned responses. And there are a lot of applications that do the basic text expansion, but Text Expander has fill-in snippets. So you could have, like when I use the example of the personalized emails and there's a single line field there where I can type the person's first name, that's a fill-in snippet. It's got the optional selection, so you can just check boxes for the pieces that you want to include before you paste it all. It's got pop-up menus, it's got date and time math, and lots, lots more. I did an article a while back, which is a little bit older, but it's still valid. All the features of Text Expander are still the same. On the comprehensive Text Expander video guide. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes, but there's videos which will walk you through how all of the different features work. Now, Text Expander is now available for not just Mac, but they have a PC version as well as iOS, and it's a subscription. So a lot of people don't like the subscriptions, but Text Expander is worth it if you're saving 96 hours of typing, because the personal version is about $4.16 a month, and the team version is $9.95 a month. Now, one of the things that when I first heard that pricing, one of the responses I had was, well, who in their right mind would want Teams? I think there's a very, very clear use case for this, though. Do you kind of want to explain who Teams might be appropriate for?
Yeah, I can see Teams be helpful for an organization. And even if you had a big company, it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody in the whole company needs Text Expander. But for the ones that are, for example, doing customer facing, maybe you want to have standardized responses written in the organization's voice so that everybody can be consistent, even if maybe that those people aren't necessarily the greatest writers. You could have consistent text snippets so that your team is efficient, but also using a standard voice. That could be really handy. So support staff, customer service, I could see in like a legal department, which I know lawyers or paralegals, I know they use a lot of standard text. That could be something that could be really handy. And then it can be all shared and centrally managed. I can see that being really handy.
Yeah, I like the legal example, because one of the things that Text Expansion does is it eliminates all of the typos that you might make. So once you get it right the first time, then if you use it over and over and over again, you never have to worry about messing something up. Once you know that the snippet that you're using or the expanded text is correct, then it's easy, and you don't have to go back and proofread all that stuff either.
Yep.
All right, the next one is Mail Pusher. Now, this is actually developed by a Dojo member. Luke McCoy is the person who reached out to me and said, hey, you want to test out this service, probably about a year ago. And this is something that allows you to use VIP type notifications no matter what email client you happen to use. So if you were familiar with the old service AwayFind, this is kind of similar. What it does is you go into the service and you determine who are the people that are important or what are the domains that are important, the people that you want to get notifications from. And then what'll happen is Mail Pusher will give you a notification whenever you get an email to your email server from that person. Now, the notifications are Mail Pusher notifications. You can't action the email directly from those notifications. That's the one downside to this service. But the way that I would implement this is I would just turn off notifications completely for your email client on your smartphone, for example. Use something like Mail Pusher to be notified of the emails, and then you can go into your email client and take action on them if it's something that you really need to do something with.
Yeah, that's really cool. And it's cool that a Dojo member developed it as well.
Yeah, I'm impressed with the service. I forget exactly how much it costs, because there's a free trial, and I think there's even a free personal tier. But then after you've used it for a while, then you get the follow-up email with if you want to continue using this after 30 days or whatever it is. This is how much it is. But from what I remember, it was not anything outrageous, definitely not any more than the other services that we have on our list here. Mm. All right, number four is Mail Butler. This is something that is specifically for Apple Mail, but it does a lot. And it was something that I was aware of for a long time, but never really understood exactly what it did until I dove into it. And it's got a bunch of additional features, which basically take Apple Mail and make it Apple Mail Plus. So you can send later, you can track messages, there's attachment reminders. So if you ever start writing an email and forget to attach something and you use a word like attached is X, then this will say, hey, you used the word attached, but you didn't attach anything. You sure you want to send this? If you send an email and you regret it, you can undo the send. So it's got a little bit of a buffer built in. Just a lot of different things that you can do with Apple Mail. And that's just really the tip of the iceberg. There's free professional and business versions of this, which range from completely free for the basic version to the business version is pretty expensive. I think it's $29.95. I believe that's euros per month. You can see a comparison chart over at mailbutler.io/pricing. But what the free and professional versions do is they just give you limited numbers of the actions of the higher tiers. So with the free version, you can get all of the essential features, and then you get limited numbers of both the professional and business features.
I think Mail Butler also, if you're needing to send larger files, if I remember, and you can, if you know, I'm completely wrong, you can tell me. But the way I remember it is it also lets you store the attachment files on, say, a cloud service, and then yep. automatically embed the link into the email. So that can be really handy if you need to send around bigger files.
Exactly. And Nate points out it's an add-on to offer features that are native to AirMail. That is true. The thing with MailButler is that it builds on top of the mail.app framework. So there are a lot of people for a lot of different reasons that do not use a third-party email client. For example, on iOS, you cannot open a message URL by default in any other client other than the default mail app. And so for some people who are really invested in Apple Mail, these third-party add-ons can be really powerful, and MailButler is definitely the best one that I've seen. Next one here is Boomerang. So this is number 5. Boomerang is specifically for Gmail, and what it does is it allows you to be reminded when nothing happens to your emails, kind of like the same reminders in Samebox. It's also got read receipts, so you can tell when somebody looked at a mail, and it's got send later. It's got a unique feature called inbox pause, where no email will come into your account for a specific time period. And this, again, has a bunch of different options from free to $49.99 a month for premium. So there's several different levels here, but if you use, it's worth calling out that if you use G Suite, so not the free gmail.com, but the actual Google Apps, you will need at least the pro version, which is $14.99 a month if you want more than 10 message credits. So what that means is that with the free version, you're limited to those 10 message credits. You can attach a boomerang to 10 of your messages. So if you're sending out a bunch of email, you're quickly going to burn through those.
Yeah, Boomerang is really, I know a lot of people who use Boomerang for exactly what you said, that like we were mentioning with same reminders, is they have an email. They can't do anything with it yet, but they don't want to get rid of it. So they'll say, oh, remind me in a week or something like that, or remind me tomorrow. And then it disappears from your inbox and comes back tomorrow. And I know it has other features, but that's the main feature that most people I know use Boomerang for.
Yeah, and it's been around for quite a while. I remember hearing about it several years ago. And it's built into the Gmail web interface. So if you use something like Mailplane, for example, or a web wrapper for Gmail, or even if you just use Gmail on the web, then Boomerang will be present. So it's not like it's tied to a specific application either.
Yep.
All right. And the last one, which is new on my radar, I think, is Newton. And the reason I say I think is because I've been familiar with Newton as an email client for a long time. But Newton is more than just an email client. It's an email ecosystem. So when you view Newton as just an email client, it's expensive because it's $49.99 per year. All right. But there's a bunch of premium features that Newton gives you, which a lot of the other services that we talked about, these are things that you would pay to add to your current email client. So if you decide that you wanted to use Newton, you will get these, like the read receipts, the send later, the snooze. It also integrates directly with a lot of different productivity apps, a lot of different cross-platform productivity apps. So specifically for people on PCs, I think Newton is a great option because it will integrate directly with really the only PC-based task management system that I can recommend, I think, and that is Todoist. And Asana is pretty decent as well, but in terms of like an OmniFocus replacement for PCs, Todoist is the only thing that comes close.
Yeah, Newton first came on to my radar when I was investigating email apps for Android, because I wanted to find an email app for Android that, you know, the read receipts and all that, that's fine. I don't personally use all that type of stuff, but I wanted an app on Android that would integrate with Evernote, with task managers. And Newton was by far, when I was looking at it, by far the most popular one. So I always thought of it as an Android thing or a PC thing. But lately, I've heard of a number of iOS users switching to it as well. So I think it's growing in popularity.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is, too. I even know some people who are pretty, they're in the Apple ecosystem, but they love Newton. It's got a pretty clean and minimalist interface. And it is a pretty sharp application. I don't think that it integrates with a lot of the other task managers, like I don't think it's going to integrate with OmniFocus or something like that because it's a cross-platform solution. But in terms of like a PC-based email client that has a direct integration, I think this is the only one that I've been able to find.
Yeah, I'm not sure about OmniFocus. I should actually try it out on iOS because I was investigating it about a year ago and I bought it, but I forgot to cancel it. So I was just charged again. So since I have a subscription, I should give it a try on iOS and see how it plays with OmniFocus.
Nice. Now, like I said, for just an email client, it is a lot. But when you think about all the features that you can get, it can easily be worth it. Now, I would recommend that you don't use this plus something like SaneBox, but for Todoist users specifically, this is a great option. This episode covered a bunch of our favorite email hacks and tools, but if you really want to take your email processing to the next level, you'll also want to look at the workflow or process that you use for managing your email. So if you want to learn a new way of approaching your email, check out our new video course, Inbox Detox. This short, actionable video course includes 5 videos that will help you quickly get up to speed, and it gives you a step-by-step process that you can follow to take control of your email inbox and reclaim your day. We walk you through the email processing workflow that we described in episode 166, step-by-step, and we even give you a flowchart which shows you exactly what to do with each email as it comes into your inbox. We also cover email best practices so that you can have confidence that your approach to processing email is working and you don't have to worry about anything slipping through the cracks anymore. But don't just take my word for it. Here's what Dojo member Nate Lowry had to say about Inbox Detox.
Since implementing email detox, my email is finally under control. I'm starting to follow up with people regularly and I'm not dropping the ball. I highly recommend you give the program a try. It decreases the friction with email and makes processing your inbox really agent efficient. I've already saved hours in just the 2 weeks since I've started, and it has more than paid for itself.
So if you need a little help getting to Inbox Zero, even if you currently have thousands of unread messages and you dread opening your email application, Inbox Detox is for you. If you want to know more about Inbox Detox, you can go to theproductivityshow.com/inbox detox. That URL again is theproductivityshow.com/inbox detox for more information on this short video course. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us an iTunes review or a star in Overcast, as it really helps us out and helps other people find out about the show. The show is on Twitter as @productivityfm. And if you want to get your questions answered and get mentioned on the show, you can send us a tweet with the #AskTPS. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next Productive Monday.